Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Ron and Don Show. I'm Don Allen. In Studio B, we have Mr. Ronald A. Edwards. Mr. Edwards, good evening. How are you?
Good evening, Mr. Allen.
Yes, sir.
Ron Edwards from the left, my associate Don Allen from the right. Don, yes, what do we got here in the Twin Cities? Ooh, the temperature has dropped.
It's seasonally dropped, yes.
Cool, if you will. You know,
yep, it's maybe 35 degrees.
Yeah, what is it right now, 34?
It's 35.
25?
35 degrees.
35, yeah. So
I'm looking out the window.
A lot of winter sports talk. Minnesota Vikings announcing earlier today, kind of a switch from yesterday. Yesterday, Coach Leslie Frazier was saying that he was going to continue with the with Josh Freeman, who was acquired from the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Well, actually signed as a free agent after being released by Tampa Bay. But then, kind of early today, the Vikings announced that Christian Ponder will be the starting quarterback for Sunday night's game against the hated Green Bay Packers.
Wow.
That'll be on national television on Sunday.
I was just going to ask, do you think the Vikings are going to do 3-13 this year? Or, I mean, win three games?
I think right now, if they don't stabilize the quarterback situation, if they don't upright the big Viking ship, I think they could be looking at a 3-13 finish, as happened 2 years ago.
I
just don't see a miracle like the one they pulled off last year, where they won their last four games, finished 10-6, and made it into the playoffs, where Christian Ponder actually bailed out after the victory over Green Bay in the regular season, and then for whatever reason he allegedly came up with an injury. He always seems to come up with these injuries. People attribute the four-game winning streak at the end of last season to Christian Ponder, but really that was the phenomenal season by Adrian Peterson, over 2,000 yards, in fact just 8 or 9 yards short of Eric Dickerson's record, if you will. But this is not the same Viking team. Mr. Allen, offensive line looks terrible, horrible. Secondary, couldn't catch a butterfly, if you will. Linebackers, just marginal, if you will. I don't want to say there's dissension in the locker room, but I think that some of this can be attributed to Christian Ponder at the beginning of the season, you know, when he went down with the so-called rib injury, which has healed pretty quick. I mean, you know, according to what's being said today, announcing that he'll start. Christian Ponder was 0-3. You know, he hasn't won any games this year.
No.
I maintain it all started in the locker room with the way that Joe Webb, a very competent quarterback, a young man who 2 years before came to the aid when Christian Ponder went down, as usual, and led them to a victory in Philadelphia and really put some things together. Let me say this. If you were to give me a shopping list and say, well, Mr. Edwards, what would you do right now? Number one, I wouldn't start Christian Ponder. I'd tell Josh Freeman we're looking at him as a quarterback of the future. It's up to him to show that he can get the job done. And secondly, though Leslie Frazier is not going to be allowed to do that as the so-called head coach, I would fire the offensive coordinator. The offensive game scheme, as reflected by Adrian Peterson in this morning's edition of the Minneapolis Star Tribune, Johannesburg Times, is a wreck, if you will. It doesn't have any imagination. It doesn't have any specificity / detail. Of course, you could say that it's up to the head coach, but head coaches hire all kinds of coordinators and assistant coaches and et cetera who are all, you know, in modern-day football, Mr. Allen, no, you don't fool around with the sports thing too much, but in modern day football, you're given, just like basketball, where now you have seven or eight assistant coaches sitting on the sideline. You got almost as many assistant coaches in basketball as you do players. In football, it's fairly close proportionally. Okay, I mean you got five, six, seven assistant coaches. You got three or four coordinators. Of course, you got the head coach, the assistant head coach, and et cetera. And so there's enough personnel out there to get it done. But anyways, I would Bill Musgrave would be terminated, and I'd bring a new or identify or appoint a new offensive coordinator. Leslie Frazier's not going to do that, and my prediction is also that unless they have a miracle rally and make playoffs, Leslie Frazier, unfortunately, who is just a very, very honorable man, just a nice individual, but then nice guys finish last, will not be back as the Viking coach in 2014.
Wow, that's too bad.
Yeah.
Too bad, yeah.
That's observation here from the left, if you will. Watched the Vikings ever since they came here. 1961, I watched the franchise, I watched the highs, the lows, the plateaus, if you will. Right now, this is a franchise that is in trouble. But it started when they did the number that they did on Joe Webb. Joe Webb was the quarterback of the future.
Mm-hmm.
The Vikings let the white press corps here in the Twin Cities pressure them, as they have done in all situations in which a black has been the starting quarterback, going back to Warren Moon, Randall Cunningham, Dante Culpepper, and now the situation with first Webb, and already Josh Freeman. I mean, so this franchise does not have a history, though they've had some good African-American quarterbacks, winners. The white press corps here has a specific standard, if you will, of racial bias on what role a African-American should play, you know. In fact, they're just a half a column away, Don, from beginning to criticize Adrian Peterson. Mark my words, buddy. You heard it here. So that's my take on a sad situation. Your question, 3-13, I think is a real, real possibility.
Wow. Yeah, there's a lot of chatter.
Telephone number, Don, in case you got the sports fans out there, the big sports fans, a lot of them who love the Vikings, a lot who don't love the Vikings. Don't necessarily call about the sports scene. Oh, by the way, I have to be a little arrogant. It was this time a year ago that yours truly was under criticism across the country for raising questions about reverse racism in the NBA with the then Minnesota Timberwolves.
Mm-hmm.
I was not a very endeared person to many of the so-called conservative white sports arena. Looks like I was right, though, when you talk in terms of the change that
Absolutely.
Remained.
Absolutely.
And what has happened and how the team has been reshaped by my good friend Flip Saunders, who I saw and began to follow when he came here as a young freshman from Cleveland to become a player for the 1970s/Minnesota Gophers, if you will, along with Kevin McHale, Michael Thompson, Osborne Lockhart, the late Ray Williams, God bless him, one of the great players of the game, and et cetera. So just want to say that because this time last year on the air, you know, it was necessary for you to ask me, had I gone over the line, remember that, in my observations and a couple of my columns about the whiteness of the Minnesota Timberwolves. It was okay for the Star Tribune and it's one of its reporters to kind of raise the question, but when we went into detail and et cetera, we were considered to be a black racist. But you know, a year later, I think we've been proven to be absolutely correct, if you will, vindicated, if one wants to use that word. And I guess I just have to put that in. Sports Illustrated even wrote an editorial piece calling myself and a man by the name of Tyrone Terrell as nothing but racist, if you will, clowns, not understanding what the great white game of basketball was all about. So, anyways, I wanted to kind of give that shout out, Don. You know what I mean?
Oh,
a lot of experts around here were, in fact, a couple experts lost their jobs as announcers. A couple black guys lost their jobs as announcers thinking they were saying what Boss wanted him to say. But I, you know, I won't throw anybody under the bus. But K-Fan, you know who I'm talking about.
Oh, yeah.
But what else we got, Don?
Well, we have a couple of people texting, asking. You had mentioned column a couple of times, and we want to let people know that you have a weekly column in the Minnesota Spokesman Recorder, which is the oldest newspaper, one of the first businesses here, black businesses here in Minnesota,
mm-hmm.
75, almost 80 years now. And you can see that online and pick up a copy. It's all over the Twin Cities, and that's www.spokesman-recorder.com, or pick up a copy. And then also Mr. Edwards has a show on Minneapolis Television Network, and that would be channel, what, 17 now, Mr. Edwards?
Channel 16, Don. 16. Channel 16,
yeah. Channel 16.
Here in the Twin Cities, MTN, Minneapolis Television Network. Also, my own website, www.theminneapolisstory.com. The Minneapolis Story, a single word. Our television program, I have been on the air for now my 24th season, uninterrupted, on MTN. And the website, if you will, in fact, I would encourage people to go to the website, www.theminneapolisstory.com. Look at our homepage, and you will see all the stories going back to our inaugural year, which was 2003. We took up the pen for the Minnesota Spokesman Recorder, though we had been writing columns as far back as the late 1960s with the old Twin Cities Courier. Ooh, people
mm-hmm.
don't even remember. And newspapers such as that. But we go back a long time, been around a long time, been writing columns for a very long time. But we appreciate the inquiry. Columns are there for in perpetuity, if you will, as they like to say, and can be called back up on either any of the websites that we're talking about. But go ahead. What else we have here?
Go ahead. No, I'm just looking here. We have a caller that's been sitting on hold here, and I would like to maybe get that caller and probably launch.
All right, let's get the caller in.
Now,
we always get the caller. We haven't even given out the number, and they know how to give us a call. Go ahead. Let's get the caller. Who are you?
Hey, caller, you're live on the air. How are you? Hello. Here you come. Caller, you're live on the air.
Hello?
Yes, you're live on the air, sir. Who are we speaking with?
Larry Tucker.
Oh, hey, Mr. Tucker. How are you doing?
Great. Just wonderful. How are you guys doing?
Real good, Mr. Tucker. You got a question for us?
I was concerned with the debacle with this Viking Stadium and the small amount of money that the spokespersons were seeking. I think that organization was the OIC. I think Reverend Sullivan would probably turn over in his grave if he knew that they was doing what they was doing. And the other social service organizations in our community seeking a small sum of money. And my concern is that I didn't go to the vineyard. So if they went to the vineyard and got some grapes and worked in the vineyard, I'm okay with that. My concern is that there's no balance. I hope that the Vikings and the Vikings personnel and the people who are running that stadium don't think that these people necessarily speak for the whole community. There may be a segment of the community they're speaking to, but they're not speaking for the whole community. These are carpetbaggers, and many of them don't even live in the city of Minneapolis. And I just feel that it's right now what we have in our community is an imbalance. I think Minneapolis is a community that is centered to the left, and these people come out of that Michelle Bachmann district, which is way to the right. And I just feel that they're in balance, and this imbalance has always caused problems. I think, Mr. Edwards, you know back in the 60s when the disturbances took place, in my community, they walked down the street and asked, well, who was the president of the Urban League? And nobody knew. But who was the president of the NAACP? Nobody knew. When they asked the preachers, well, why don't y'all get those guys that out there in the streets raising hell in check? And they said, we don't know them. And James Baldwin said the same thing. He had a group of people at the Teresa Hotel, and he said to them, we're trying to solve the so-called Negro problem. But if we left this hotel and went down there on the streets, we couldn't even talk to those people. We don't even talk their language. I just hope the people at the Viking Stadium understand that the group of people they're speaking to do not represent the community. They may represent a small extremist group in the community, but they do not represent the community. And I hope that we would try to convince them that the kibbles and bits that they took off the table is unacceptable, and there should be a much more broader input from the community versus the small segment of the community in which they have
let me do this for our listening audience, both locally, domestically, and internationally, because you've raised a couple of interesting questions that need to be absolutely polished, if you are polished in the sense of reminding people. And by the way, the hotel, Hotel Teresa, that Mr. Tucker made reference to is a landmark hotel there in Harlem, which was the center of a lot of movement meetings and et cetera during the uprisings of the 1960s, for those of you that don't have that history, because black history has been made to disappear. You made a statement at the very opening of your comments, Ms. Tucker, about the small portion, if you will, of the billion-dollar package that represents the construction of the Minnesota Stadium, and then another half a billion as it pertains, or even more, to the development in and around the stadium. And I've known Mr. Tucker for many, 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 many years. We go back even to the days in Omaha when we first met, when we used to go there from the Twin Cities to sit in a barbershop of a great man, Senator Chambers, if you will. I am told by any number of reliable sources, Ernie Chambers, by the way, for those that don't know that part of their history, I am told that at one point, and there was an article, Mr. Tucker, my associate, Mr. Allen, in the Minnesota Spokesman Recorder newspaper that I write for, have a column in, about 4 months ago, in which a man by the name of Mel Reeves, who is an employee of Higher Minnesota, which is affiliated with the Summit Academy OIC, wrote an article and revealed something that had kind of been a rumor, that negotiations had been going on and that a group of 15 organizations had been negotiating a $2.5 million training grant, if you will. And Mr. Reeves, in writing in his column, Spokesman Recorder, was crying about the fact that the chairwoman of the Sports Facility Authority, who actually runs the stadium, runs the current stadium, actually, on behalf of the taxpayers of the state of Minnesota and in conjunction with the Vikings, had cut the amount of money being asked for by the African-American leaders by $1.8 million, cut it back to $700,000, which was a shock, Mr. Tucker. You know, you and I, for many years, have watched and discussed the art of negotiation, the ability to be able to negotiate and negotiate toughly on behalf of your constituency, and you've eloquently laid out the importance of recognizing that there are different factions within every community, every clan, every village, if you will. And so Reeves was complaining about that, and so that began to generate and necessitate some reflections about what the heck happened. How did, you know, they get cut by $1.8 million? There was discussions about Alfred Babington Johnson of the Stair-Step Foundation had been one of those who had been in the meetings and allegedly was negotiating along with Summit OIC and its leadership, Louis King, if you will. Scott Gray of the Urban League of Minneapolis was a part of the so-called negotiation team. Ezell Jones, if you will, who has a number of different corporations and companies that he facilitates, if you will, and that they had been kind of like the negotiation team. And then Alex Tittle had been brought in as the equity director, if you will, and he was a part of the negotiations. And that Michelle Kelm-Hagelin became very unhappy with the inability of the quote-unquote negotiation team to answer some specific questions about its own history and what kind of success had they had, particularly in the area of training and et cetera. Now, at the same time, there were parallel, according to the leadership information that has been gathered as it pertains to these negotiations that allegedly have gone on for almost a year and a half, that there was really going to be a master coup in which this leadership group of African-American leaders, conservative, as Mr. Tucker pointed out, really to the right, kind of a part of the Michelle Bachmann thinking of the world, were going to get, first they said, Mr. Tucker, they were going to get the concession business, the whole concession package, which is just millions and millions and millions of dollars. Then they were going to get some concession stands within the concession arena, if you will, maybe 7, 8, 9, 10, 12 stands. In fact, one of the negotiators went out and bought a food service truck, if you will, and started identifying himself as having expertise in the world of food service. Unfortunately, the Vikings controlled all of the negotiations with respect to the concession business, and of course, as we now all know, once the lease agreement was signed, the Vikings became the sole proprietors, owners, and controllers of the concessions, and they basically said, I'm told to our top-notch negotiation team that one of the reasons that the Vikings as a for-profit corporation gives to the United Way so the United Way can give to these nonprofit groups and that they do not deal with nor do business with nonprofits. And I have asked Mr. Tucker recently as this past Sunday on my television program, I've called upon our very good friend, Senator Bobby Joe Champion, to convene a public meeting of the special commission that he is the co-chair of, the legislative commission appointed by the legislature to be the kind of final overseers of what everything that goes on, including, you know, negotiations and et cetera, and call upon him to hold a public hearing and ask the negotiation teams on both sides, including that led by Ted Mondale, to indicate what the heck went wrong. Because the point that you have made, Ms. Tucker, at the very beginning of your reflections, I mean, goes to the heart of at what point do we get a report about what the heck happened? I mean, we lost out as the African-American community all the way around, and so we need to be guided by what was it that we did wrong during the negotiation. Notice I said we, because we are all members of the black community. And if the black community suffers, we all suffer. And so I would think, sir, that we need to have an explanation about why the number turned out to be so small. When all during this summer of 2013, I was hearing all kinds of expressions and declarations of success and et cetera, and hundreds of millions of dollars that would be coming into the African-American community, as well as a minimum, sir, in closing, a minimum of 600 jobs. On the project involving people of color. And so I hope that kind of tightens up this whole situation that you put your finger on. What the hell happened in the negotiations? Now, I don't know if Mr. Allen or yourself, Mr. Tucker, has any kind of information that would help all of us. I don't know what the heck happened. You know, where we lost out. Do you have any observations, Mr. Tucker?
Well, you know, I think, as my dear grandmother used to say, maybe we're trying to get an apple off a pear tree.
Okay.
And we just had so many people at the table who are not business people.
Oops.
And they're not making business decisions. They don't have a point of reference. They don't have any experience in doing that. The
Oops.
Question as to what level of success they have had in present and our past endeavors is an excellent question, and everybody knows the answer to that. I mean, it's like the lawyer, he never asked a question that he don't know the answer to. They asked that question because they knew the answer to the question. They haven't had any success, and they're conscious of the fact that some of these organizations' success successes are limited, if non-existing. So that's a tragedy that we have people who go to the table and do not understand the issues at hand. They did the same thing with the Twin Stadium, but the Pollads at the end said, well, we're going to give X number of million dollars to help low-income people in certain zip codes, 55411 and 55412,
absolutely,
to assist them with down payments in purchasing of homes, which I thought was an excellent move. They will probably come back at a later date and find some kind of way to continue that kind of endeavor. But the folks in our African-American community are just not business people, and they're not very good social service people. And they're carpet baggers who take more from the community than they bring to the community. I don't know how they can go in the room and even negotiate or even begin to negotiate. But like I said, it's not my vineyard. And maybe we come into the vineyard at the 11th hour. But I think that vineyard gate cannot be closed at this time. It must be open for further negotiations. And that's basically where I'm at. And I think that these organizations who continue to support some of these spokespersons who are totally out of balance, and they don't represent the community. And I think they know that, but I think they have a little kibbles and bits that they need to give to somebody, so they give it to them versus not giving it to anybody. So, Mr. Edwards, I think that asking for certain things, you got to know, are you at the apple tree or at your pear tree? What tree are you at? I don't think they knew what to ask for or knew how to ask for it.
Wow.
I mean,
yeah.
You know,
that is then disastrous, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, in the Twin Stadium, every nonprofit or several nonprofit has kiosks in the Twin Stadium. They just finally got around to asking for a kiosk. But they don't have any experience in running anything.
Right.
So why would you give them
Army. Yeah.
Yeah, why would you do that when they don't have any experience? And to me, that's the real tragedy. Now, not having experience is not the issue. The issue is that why did they not go out and couple themselves with or bring in the necessary expertise they didn't have so they can come to the table with some built-in expertise so as to have some credibility when they start negotiating? They didn't do that. That's another tragedy. What makes you think you're an expert in the area that you have no expertise in?
Nor success. Yes. Yeah.
Success.
All right. All right, Mr. Tucker, anything else? Or Mr. Allen, anything from your end, from the right?
Well, I'm just listening because while Mr. Tucker and you, Mr. Edwards, were talking, I was kind of thumbing over this information. And, you know, Mr. Edwards, you and I were in a meeting with Michelle Kelm-Hagelin, Wanda Kirkpatrick, Ted Mondale, Aaron, who is Wanda Kirkpatrick's sidekick, and Jennifer Hathaway, the communications person for the Minnesota Sports Facility Authority. And I came across this paragraph that was submitted originally to the Minnesota Sports Facility Authority that there is no documented evidence of. And if you don't mind, I'd like to read it to you while I have both of you on the phone.
Certainly, Mr. Allen, go right ahead.
It's a Summit Academy, has successfully demonstrated the capacity in providing a skilled labor force on multiple large-scale projects. The target field, Twin Stadium, and the TCF Bank Gopher Stadium. For both projects, we worked with Mortenson Construction to fill their labor needs. Our goal was to provide trained minority labor force for the project so the projects would be able to meet the minority participation goal. We placed 9 Summit graduates earning $18.63 per hour at the TCF project and 28 graduates on the Twin Stadium earning $21.63 per hour. In both cases, the general contractor exceeded hiring goals. In the case of TCF, in the case of TCF Bank Stadium, exceeded them by 10%. Currently, we work with Ryan Construction to provide quality minority male and female workers for the North Target North project. And then, you know, I was
unfortunately, much of that is not true, and it's not supported by empirical evidence and documentation. And I must indicate that a little over a year ago, on the occasion of the meeting with the leadership of the Sports Facility Authority, the chairwoman and Ted Mondale, one of the things Mr. Mondale told me personally, because during the period of the construction of the Target Field, home of the Minnesota Twins, I was oftentimes the only African-American that showed up and raised questions about the information being provided by Miss Littlejohn of M.A. Mortensen, M.A. Mortensen itself, and other actors, and et cetera. And, you know, Ted Mondale said to me and Mr. Allen and Mr. Edwards, you know, he took personal responsibility that there was neither a plan nor were the statistical documentations that were being provided correct, nor had they been audited. And he said, you know, we're going to get it right this time. Just please give us a chance. And that was recorded, if you will. And so you know and I know, Mr. Allen, that he made that admission slash confession to me. It was something I knew. It was something I took a lot of criticism about back in 2006, 7, 8, and 9 as they prepared to move into the stadium. But we had Ted Mondale himself indicating, and Mr. Tucker, I know you have an appreciation of this. You move in the circles of development and et cetera, where Ted Mondale just said, yeah, you know, you're absolutely right. The information pertaining to minority or quote-unquote participation by color in at Target Field was a sham. The books were cooked. The documents and documentation was twisted and erroneous, if you will, and there's no documentation whatsoever, gentlemen, because at one point went before the Board of Regents, asking the Board of Regents to provide specific detail. In fact, a man by the name of Craig Taylor was positioned to block that and never could produce the information with respect to what was the racial workforce on the TCF Stadium. There wasn't any African-American participation on the TCF Stadium.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and,
Ron,
you know, go ahead, Mr. Tucker.
You're absolutely correct. I was a contractor in the mid-70s up until about the mid-80s. And I was heavily involved in the Minnesota Minority Contractors Organization. And I've been to several meetings over the years, and the last meeting I went to, we had an excellent representation. And I asked the question, how many rough carpenters do we have? 15, 20 people raised their hand. I said, how many finished carpenters do we have in the group? 3 or 4 people raised their hand. We don't have 100 people that are contractors or with the skill set to work on all these projects. They're just not there.
There. Thank you.
And they're doing what they call in the construction industry bicycling. I think, Ron, you know what that terms mean.
Yeah.
You know, when you run to job site A, they'll take a African-American off of job site A and put him on a job site B when that job site needs some kind of certification.
Yeah.
The skill set's not there. And the same thing happened with the racetrack up in Forest Lake. We asked the question about the large number of so-called minorities participating. And somebody asked the question is, what's the zip code of the people that was hired on that particular project?
Mm-hmm.
And the zip codes were all in the northern part of Minnesota. There was no inner-city zip codes available, and we know what those zip codes are, 55411, 55412, 55418, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, where the large number or significant number of minorities people live in. It just wasn't fair. They look at the Social Security numbers of the individuals that worked on the job site. Okay, what did you turn over to the Social Security numbers, or what did you turn over to the taxes? Provide the 1099s or tax statements.
Absolutely.
They couldn't provide any of those things.
That's
and
right.
These people go in the rooms with these sham operations, you know. And like I said, we keep trying to get an apple off a pear tree, and it's just not there. And I know contractors right now, and I have a contractor that lives across the alley from me, and he talks about his attempt to hire people out of the OIC, and he said it's a joke. And the kids are complaining that all they do is come to the classroom and play on their cell phones and sign in, and at the end of the day, go home. And this information is widely known.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing about this information, and I'm not speaking out of school. I'm just a little upset with the individuals who are throwing out these nickels like they're, you know, like they're doing something, and are pretending as though that they're not conscious of this. And they get away with it because nobody speaks up, nobody talks to them, and the people who do speak up, you and Donnie, are considered radical traitors. Why are you doing that?
Absolutely.
Blah, 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 blah,
right.
blah, blah.
Right.
I think we just need to stay on top of this and make sure that this kind of foolishness just does not continue. Does not continue.
All right, Ms. Tucker, want to thank you. And what I'm going to also do in support of what Mr. Tucker has just told us, no, you'll appreciate this, Mr. Tucker. I'm going to read from the Pacific Language under 473J.12 of the legislation, Section 17. This is fully support something that Mr. Tucker talked about the construction of a racing facility. This is at a line 19.9 through 19.13. It says the following. Future goals for construction contracts to be awarded to women and minority-owned businesses will be in a percentage at least equal to the minimum used for the City of Minneapolis development projects. And the other construction workforce will establish workforce utilization goals at least equal to current city goals and include, this is crucial, and include workers from city zip codes city zip codes that have high rates of poverty and unemployment. You won't find anybody from 55411. Mr. Tucker, appreciate it.
Excuse me.
Pardon?
Appreciate you, you know, speaking with us.
You know,
raising some of these issues.
Yeah we, you know, I was involved in using the zip codes as a means of verifying how well you are doing and how well you're not doing.
Mm-hmm.
So, I'm aware of some of this. So,
yeah, well, what
listen,
I'm
you guys,
saying,
have
this
a good
is
evening.
The legislation. Senator Jeff Hayden, to his credit, taking strong leadership a year and a half ago, insisted that this be put in there. And now when the question is raised, no one can to speak to it. In fact, in January of this year, Mr. Allen and I were actually attacked at a meeting at the Sports Facility Authority by Wanda Kilpatrick and Velma Corvell, who maintained that the zip code, and they were joined by a lawyer from Dorsey Whitney, that we did not know what we were talking about when we talked in terms of zip codes and areas of chronic high unemployment were to be utilized. She initially said, as well as she talked about there was not to be veterans' preference, that wasn't true. That's the kind of undermining that's been going
on. Yes.
Yeah, let me raise one other question. We were about in with the Viking Stadium. We have individuals with certain skills and are in certain businesses that could perhaps, if the rules were changed, be able to participate in that process to a greater extent than they are now. The City of Minneapolis has a law that says that they will buy all the material for the Viking Stadium and then hire contractors to install it. And we said, well, if you do that, there's several suppliers in the Minneapolis area, African-American and so-called minority suppliers in the area, are in a position to buy that material.
Yeah.
Hello?
Are you still there?
Mr. Tucker?
Hello? We seem to have lost him. Let me say on that particular point that he just raised, the responsibility for making sure that that is adhered to or implemented is the equity director, who is Mr. Alex Tittle. And I'm not aware of any kind of public discussions that Mr. Tittle has had with the broader community in which he has laid that out. In fact, I think we're due a report from Mr. Tittle and the Sports Facility Authority. Now, they had a meeting 2 days ago, Mr. Allen, and I don't know if is Mr. Tucker back with us, Mr. Allen?
No, he's not as yet.
Okay. There was a meeting 2 days ago of the so-called advisory committee, a, I don't know, 30-member group that was crafted by Wanda Kirkpatrick and Aaron a year ago, working as contractors, double-dipping, by the way, still drawing a salary for the Met Council and also getting money from the Vikings and the Sports Facility Authority. But anyways, they created these advisory committees, which are actually intended to serve as buffers between the community and the five-member policy board, which is the sports facility authority, if you will. So, but Mr. Tittle has the responsibility by legislation to report to State Senator Champion and State Senator Jeff Hayden what is happening in any definitive and designated and inquired area, and that's not happening. And that's not happening at all. And so now what's happened is a couple of additional layers of obstruction, if you will, has been put in place to make it more difficult to obtain the information that we've been talking about. But why don't we give that number out just in case?
Sure.
It's moving. Yeah.
Sure. Our phone lines are wide open. They've been open. 347-426-3904. Again, that number is 347-426-3904. So, Mr. Edwards, let me ask you, do you think that, let me find it here real quick. You think this statement applies in the W.E.B. Du Bois, in the Souls of Black Folks, wrote, "To be a poor man is hard, but to be a poor race in the land of dollars is the very bottom of hardship."
Well, Du Bois was absolutely on point, as was 50 years later, the beloved Martin Luther King Jr., when he talked in terms of the very issues that we're talking about right here,
mm-hmm.
that whereas the Negro may not be qualified, that does not mean that he is qualifiable. In other words, maybe our people have not been trained, but that does not mean that they cannot be trained. We thought that that was the mission many, many, many years ago, Mr. Allen, when these organizations were created and endorsed, if you will, and most importantly, entrusted with the well-being of the development of the African-American workforces, if you will. And so Du Bois, Martin Luther King Jr., have spoke to that as a part of historical reflection. I think that the caller, Mr. Tucker, really put his fingers on some things about people who are so arrogant, if you will, and so devoid of shame, that they think that they can sit in meetings with people such as Ted Mondale, such as the members of the Sports Facilities Authority, and definitely with successful business persons, no matter what kind of guff has been developed by the Star Tribune against the Wilf family and the Viking organizations. The Vikings do this for a living, and that is to negotiate with an eye towards successful resolution / profit, okay? But these individuals who negotiated or certainly told the world that they were negotiating all kinds of packages have, in fact, positioned themselves, if you will, irrespective of the consequences, and represented themselves to the community as the best and brightest, quote-unquote, that we have. I don't accept that,
mm-mm.
but they took that responsibility on, and it is time now to be accountable, and it is time for the community to be enlightened on what the heck happened, okay? A $1 billion project, and at best, the African-American community and other communities of color received about $700,000.
And Mr. Edwards, as someone from the right, I, you know, that kind of worries about these types of special interest groups that go in and do this, and they are not representing the wider, broader community. I think that, you know, the Minnesota Sports Facility Authority should, you know, maybe just stop this altogether and reexamine this on a broader community. Because, you know, I've had correspondence with Ms. Jennifer Hathaway at the Minnesota Sports Facility Authority, and, you know, they only received, from what they said, one RFP.
That's
request
correct.
For
that
proposal.
Correct. Mm-hmm.
And so mm-hmm. I asked her, I says, well, where did you put out the information publicly? Now, I can't find it to this day. But she wrote me an email back. Well, we put in the Star Tribune and Pioneer Press and WCCO like we always do. And I says, okay, that's not really how you get minority people involved in something like this. But, you know, it's looking more and more each day, Mr. Edwards, like this was a scripted kind of event with these people that say they represent the community as a whole. And I'm looking at some of the comments, like obviously we're still Heckle and Jekyll, and from individuals.
I don't have any problem with that. Yeah,
yeah,
I don't have any problem with that.
No, neither do I. Yeah, it's Halloween. Let's do it. And
I'd rather be Jekyll and Heckle than Benedict Arnold.
Yeah, exactly. And it says your recent comments have been far beyond suggestive and embarrassingly inaccurate and inflammatory. So which of the
well, let me say this because I know who that came from. I mean, I know the attacks that are being mounted towards you, Mr. Allen. Give us details and specificity. Indicate what specifically has been said that is inconsistent with the truth. You know, I keep hearing this. I hear these rumors, and I know these discussions are going on in secret meetings at the Golden Times Cafe in St. Paul, at U-Rock, if you will, at J.D. Hoyts and et cetera. I mean, I know all about that. I know about the dummy corporations that has been set up, if you will. I know about discussions as early as April of 2012 in which leaders, quote, unquote, bringing in white partners were talking in terms of how to burn the books, if you will, massage the numbers, falsify the documentation and et cetera. I mean, that's the only thing that has been successful. Now, you know, if they want to talk about that, I welcome the challenge of talking about that, if you will. I welcome the challenge of let's get absolute clarity and let's have a real honest discussion about how you guys got your butts whipped at the negotiation table.
Yeah, and it's really interesting, you know, to see this. And I have this online for everybody to look at so, you know, they know I'm not making it up, but you know, they have the original proposal that went in, Mr. Edwards, for a total of $2.6 million to pay joint venture partners. It's very suspect. You know, I have a hard time swallowing or even dealing with, you know, this Stairstep Foundation piece being in this because they're not contractors and they really don't have an organization. I have a real problem.
Well, they have some failed business experience, though. Oops.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Plenty of that.
Failed business experience. Yeah. Okay. Go ahead.
And then I'm looking at a nonprofit that was it's not really a nonprofit. It's a agency CSI that has agreements with the school to go into the school and talk to kids about whatever they do, and which I have no idea. And I see them as part of this package and for this outreach, and I'm looking at this and I'm going like, wow, this is very interesting to see these type of numbers and these people involved in this scam, which I'll just go ahead and call it, and or a shakedown. And I mean, it's all factual. I'm looking right at it. It's right here in front of me. And now the amount, like you said, went down to $700,000. I have no understanding of how that could even work with how they have it broke down on this chart. You know, someone's going to be pissed. You know, that's just utterly impossible. And so when you look at this kind of stuff and you see this continuous, and I know that some of these people are out here right now listening, and I just like to get something off my chest with them. You know, when we speak facts about what's going on in the community, it has nothing to do with a mental illness. But you use that as your defense. You don't come back and deny anything that myself or Mr. Edwards has said. You don't say it, oh, it's not true. You come back with this, oh, you're not on your medication. But the fact is, you will get caught up with, okay? And this will be exposed. If we stay in our lane and do the news and information, you know, people will know about this, and people are going to have to ask questions. That's just the bottom line. So you
and let me say this for our listening audiences, and like we said before, phone lines are certainly open. Judgment Day is coming on pretty quick because let's go back over the itinerary. First of all, the state of Minnesota has found the necessary banks to sell the bonds that need to be sold, and I'm not sure now which figure is going to be $348 million or $498 million because it looks like the city of Minneapolis is trying to ride on the coattails. But whatever the number is, a press release issued yesterday identified the three prime banks, including Wells Fargo, who will help sell these bonds. Now, the groundbreaking is to take place probably second week in November. Now, some people have been saying that the construction and et cetera will take place then. Again, I keep telling people that's not accurate. If there's anything that's not accurate, that's certainly not accurate by them, by their side. Construction cannot start. The actual construction, starting with demolition of the current Metrodome and then the beginning of the construction and beginning to, by sections, build the new massive Montage Hall, cannot start until probably the first week in April. Okay. Now, that means, though, that your workforce has to be in place. And that's something we've not touched on. It was one of the questions that I posed to State Senator Bobby Jill Champion, co-chair of the Special Commission, Oversight Commission for the stadium. All right, let's get it. Let's get the call.
Okay. Caller, you're live on the air. Go ahead.
Thank you. Thank you, Ron and Don. It's great to hear you tonight. And typically I'm able to catch your shows in the archives. And I've received a wonderful, terrific education on financing of new stadia and the information you've provided. It's very, very engaging. I have a question for you based on reading your promo for this show. Can you define for me the term minority? Because, you know, this is why I bring this. And when we talk about be it contracting or hiring, you know, in the field that I'm in the legal profession, you hear law firms come out with their report saying that, you know, they've hired 33% of their first-year associates are minorities. And then you look, you know, they probably hired 25, 30, 40 attorneys. And not a single one is African American.
Absolutely.
You know, but the minority, I don't even. That's a term. Every time I see it, it's difficult. I need a definition. I can't assume that it means something that's beneficial, at least for me. You know. So
I'll respond very quickly as a former chairman of the City Civil Rights Commission, and et cetera, who took this matter up. You know. 40-some years ago, we always rejected the definition of minority, particularly based on Supreme Court decisions and cases in which that issue has come up. A minority is nothing more than a group that is less than the majority, primarily based on the census, okay? And by the way, I think, as you know, sir, we're no longer an all-white nation. We're not a majority white nation, in fact, so that raises serious questions. But here's how the game has really been played. Mr. Allen and I have been talking about this for over a year. Minorities for the purposes of these shams includes white women and everybody else, and it also now is beginning to include immigrants. And I'm talking about immigrants not only from Mexico, Central America, South America, but from other countries. And so minorities is kind of a melting pot. Now, what I've attempted to do for many years is to force a breakdown by racial definition. I'm just like you said earlier, sir. How many African Americans? How many Native Americans? How many Asians? How many Pacific Islanders, if you will? And basically what happens is that there's continued resistance. Now, I think that my good friend the Commissioner of Human Rights, Kevin Lindsay, made a mistake. He let somebody BS him into talking about 32% minorities. A civil rights director by the name of Michael Jordan, 7 years ago, made a heck of a statement, and it's documented in the archives of the city and et cetera, when he said, we can successfully obtain our and achieve our goals of minority participation and not hire a single African-American. And that, to me, was one of the most profound statements, legally, morally, or otherwise, that has been made by a so-called official, because that's just the way that you can do it. Let's say that we get 32% quote-unquote minorities on the sports facility. We don't have to quote-unquote hire a single African-American, and yet we would maintain that we have met our goal. We have met our obligation. We have met the promise and commitment. And so yours is a very valid question. I just think that, and we see it happening now in a case dealing with the University of Michigan, don't we? I just think that we're going to have to find a way as black people to develop and craft a case to get before the United States Supreme Court to make the Supreme Court make a firm legal declaration of what the hell minority means.
Well, you know,
because to us as black folk, it means zero, nothing, absolutely nothing.
Well, in the state of New Jersey, and I can speak for this because I'm affiliated with their law school there, their affirmative action program, minority student program at their law school, which came out of the 1967 riots in Newark, today that minority student program includes quote-unquote poor whites or disadvantaged whites.
Yes.
So that's something new. Now, I'm going to say it's new, but it's something that is being used to sort of thwart any legal attacks. Because the nation, whites, you know, it's so ironic here that whites have a disdain for African Americans getting a leg up, quote unquote, a leg up. Which is ridiculous, right? So, in order to defeat that, some of these programs are including whites to say that, hey, we're not discriminating. And it's a discussion, I think, Ron and Don, that we need to have on a more constructive level. You know, we really need to sit back and ask ourselves, are these programs beneficial to the original beneficiary, you know, the group that was supposed to benefit from these programs.
The original litigants. That you're absolutely correct.
Yeah, exactly. I'll let it go there, and let me continue to look.
All right, because we're down to about 2 minutes, sir. We appreciate it. We hope to maybe get you back next week. Feel free to call in, because we need to attempt to enlarge this discussion, because you've raised a hell of a point.
And
I want to say one other thing. Thank you for calling. I want to say one other thing, Mr. Allen. It's ironic that in the Michigan case, that the Michigan Supreme Court, though, said it was okay to use the standard of being an alumnus and the heir of an alumnus at the University of Michigan to fit into the criteria of entrance, but you couldn't fit in race. Now, you explain that to me, Mr. Allen.
All right, can't do it.
All right, we're down to the last minute, ain't we? In fact, less than that.
Yep, we're a minute
right.
and 12 seconds, and we'd like to thank everybody for listening. We'll be back next week, same time,
next
same
week.
Station, and we will continue this conversation. Thank you for all the callers that called in, and we'll see you next week.
All right.